Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
But you also had people that were very fine people.
Very fine people.
On both sides.
And the aliens would mind meld and give them the technology. They're bad aliens.
So
are you surprised the Nazis were influenced by demons?
No, if demons are real, I would definitely think they'd be on the side of the Nazis.
Yeah.
McDonald's is connected to the Clintons. They chop up the bodies and put them into the sausage and hamburgers. People are being cannibalized. Look it up.
And I'm watching CNN talk about this as violent white nationalist protests. We have done everything in our power to keep this peaceful, you know?
It's Pepe's become kind of a symbol.
Welcome to Yeah Nah Passeran, a show about fascism and its gravediggers. I'm Cam Smith.
I'm Andy Fleming.
And this week we are joined by journalist Will Sommer from The Bulwark. Thanks for joining us, Will.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
I guess just to begin with, could you tell us a little bit about how you found yourself on the far right beat?
Yeah, it's a funny story. I grew up in Texas in a pretty Republican family. It was like listening to a lot of Atlas Shrugged and Rush Limbaugh and all this stuff. And then in the George W. Bush administration, I was like, wait a minute, this guy, things were not going well between the Iraq War and Hurricane Katrina. But I still had this real, so I was no longer a Republican, but I still had this real passion for right-wing media. And so I followed it for a while. And then in 2016, obviously a lot of these characters that I was privately obsessed with, people like Milo Yiannopoulos or Ben Shapiro, Laura Loomer, suddenly I'd be at a party and someone would say, have you ever heard of this guy? And I'd be like, oh my God, I can talk to you for an hour about that. And so I started writing a newsletter about it. And that was about a decade ago at this point. It was my kind of private menagerie of weirdos suddenly became a lot more relevant, unfortunately, in America.
Yeah, it's a bit of a curse.
Yes, but people say, how do you do it? How do you not go crazy? Someone just said to my wife, they said, oh, I hope he's in therapy or whatever. But she's like, you know what? He just loves it. Just every twist and turn of these weirdos. And you couldn't make them up, a lot of them. And so it's if you have the stomach for it, look, you guys are in the same boat. And it's if you have a certain kind of sick disposition, there's a lot to enjoy out of it.
There's certainly a lot of high weirdness to get to. Oh, where do we even begin? Let's start off with the civil war that's roiling within the world of MAGA at the moment. You recently wrote a piece about how the war in Iran has exposed some fracture lines. Are there MAGA influencers being paid by Iran, or are they just easily influenced by Lego AI slop?
Who isn't influenced by the Lego AI stuff?
Oh, I got this. Some bangers.
I look at it and I go, oh my gosh, these guys might have some points, at least about Pete Hegseth. I think it's interesting. On one hand, you have someone like Tucker Carlson, who appears to be very close to Qatar, who Laura Loomer, who's his archenemy, will call him Tucker Qatarlson. Tucker Carlson claims the CIA is investigating him for ties with communications with people in Iran or with sort of Iranian representatives. A lot of this stuff you have to take with a grain of salt and almost see through a sort of funhouse mirror. Like, there may be some tiny truth to it, but how is that getting refracted into what Tucker Carlson is now saying? But I do think that there are a lot, broadly we can say, a lot of right-wing media influencers in the United States with weird foreign ties that are often sort of unexplained. And I think this is helping to fuel this MAGA civil war we've been seeing since at least Trump tried to close the Jeffrey Epstein case back in July. And all these different beats that have accumulated since then, whether it's the war in Iran or the Charlie Kirk assassination, now there's really like a full-blown just a sense of real disunity and malaise in the MAGA movement.
You've mentioned a number of figures associated with MAGA and the alt-right in the United States. Thinking back to about 10 years ago, who are the survivors who have come through and are still peddling influence?
You know, it's interesting. You're right on. These are often figures who don't have very long shelf lives. And the ones who do often have to reinvent themselves. In some ways, you have, just to pick, like, we could be here all day, but like talking about the different trends. But to take one, there's this new generation of these YouTube guys, guys who are often really young, like in their early 20s, people with names like Cam Higby or Nick Shirley, guys who will say, I'm going to investigate fraud. And coincidentally, it's always some kind of minority community. And they often kind of show up and they say, let me in to see the daycare. And when the people at the daycare go, oh gosh, I don't think so. I don't think you could see the kids today. They say, this is a fraudulent operation. So that's a new generation. On the other hand, you have people like someone like Laura Loomer, who was very much big in the first Trump administration for disrupting events, going to Hillary Clinton book parties and saying, arrest her, she's a criminal. And then she hit the skids and chained herself to Twitter's headquarters. She was someone who even other MAGA people were like, this lady's crazy. I can't associate with her. She's hurting my brand. And now in the new Trump administration, she's in the White House. She's advising Trump on who to fire. She's getting things done. Like, she got Palestinian children were coming to the U.S. for temporary medical. Kids who had their limbs blown off. In a rare act of compassion, the U.S. government was letting them in to get medical treatment. And she said, you can't let these Palestinian kids in. And so she got them banned from the country. This is someone who has a lot of influence in America, despite being this truly almost like comical and malevolent figure.
Doesn't seem great. Seems maybe like the throne of a dying empire, you might be observing. Yes.
I do think, look, I am a guy who is in many ways like a pretty, I like the American concept. I feel like I liked the kind of a lot of the World War II order. But then you look around and I do agree that it certainly is what a dying empire would be doing in a lot of cases.
As you mentioned, the Epstein files opened up a lot of fissures. People like Mike Cernovich, a massive Trump supporter, where does he stand on Trump now?
Yeah, Mike Cernovich is a guy who is, it's interesting with these characters like Laura Loomer, like Mike Cernovich, this guy named Jack Posobiec, these guys who could not exist without Trump. In like a Trump-like figure is the only way that anyone would care who they are, because you have to have, these people are so bizarre. Mike Cernovich is a guy who is like a proto manosphere guy. He had these pills called Gorilla Mind, which of course we all want our minds to be like a gorilla's. And he's like a big Pizzagate conspiracy theorist. But more recently, he started to turn on Trump and to say that he's, whether it be, Mike Cernovich was very much kind of like an Epstein investigator type guy. And I think he filed some motions in court related to releasing the files. And so he's seeing Trump say, who cares? Only losers care about the Epstein case. You go, I don't know about that. Or he visits Washington, and this is a guy who's pretty plugged in on the right. And he says, people are acting like Democrats are never going to retake power. You can act with impunity in terms of corruption, in terms of personal graft. And I think there's a lot of evidence that's true. And so you're starting to see these people who are not really integrated into the MAGA system. People who, as far as I know, I don't think Mike Cernovich is getting a payoff in some way. He's not getting whatever kind of kickbacks other people in the movement are getting. And so he's looking around and he's saying, this isn't what he voted for.
I mean, to be fair, he's been consistently against a pedophile elite.
Yeah, which whether in some cases imagined as with Pizzagate or in some cases real like Jeffrey Epstein and his cronies. And at the point where suddenly the guy you've, Donald Trump, which had devoted his career to, suddenly he's looking around and saying, wait a minute, what is being covered up here? And I think it's not a crazy question to ask.
Speaking of the acting with impunity, I saw a story the other day, I think maybe in your previous publication, The Daily Beast, about Trump becoming very upset when the fighter pilots were downed over Iran. He thought it could turn into a Jimmy Carter moment if they weren't retrieved. Of course, Jimmy Carter's re-election failed because he lost some soldiers in Iran. I did think, you don't need to worry about re-election, do you?
Yeah, you would think, right? There is this sense of, I guess from my point of view, you really can't put anything by Donald Trump, particularly after January 6th. People will say, people on the right will say, oh, he's joking about a third term. And people on the left will say, don't panic. Don't let him freak you out about it. But I don't know. He tried to stop the 2020 election. And this is someone who I think even if we set aside the third term, I mean, there's a lot of really weird stuff going on with the midterms in November. We saw the director of national intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, over in this weird, she had this all black like spy outfit. She went down to Georgia and was saying, oh, we got to review these ballots from 2020. I've heard third hand from national security people that they're really concerned that there's going to be some kind of effort to, there's Tulsi Gabbard supposedly working on a report that's going to say the election was stolen in 2020. And then as a result, they'll have a pretext to have a real federal role in November. And so I think there is a lot of stuff to be concerned about in terms of Trump and the election.
In terms of foreign influence, there's been a lot of discussion about the real or alleged influence of Russia upon U.S. politics and especially elections. One of its projects seems to have been something called Tenet Media, which was exposed, I think, last year as being funded by the Russians. Can you tell us what's become of that? And do you think that there's credence to these claims about nefarious plans by Russia to influence U.S. elections?
Yeah, and you've hit here on one of my great passions, Tenet Media. This was one of the craziest situations. So in, I think, 2022, 2023, a lot of the biggest names in right-wing media digitally got together and they said, we're launching a YouTube channel called Tenet Media. These are people like Tim Pool, Benny Johnson, Lauren Southern, who I believe was previously married to an Australian guy. And so you guys have an Australia connection there, the Dave Rubin. And so you have this kind of coalition of people and they started putting up videos on this YouTube channel and it wasn't clear why it existed. Like, why wouldn't they put it up on their own channel? No one was watching it. These videos were getting like hundreds or maybe a few thousand views each. And I thought, why is this thing still going on? And then in the sort of the last weeks of the Biden administration, the FBI said, yeah, this thing is a Russian front. And it was being run by this woman who was herself a right-wing media figure named Lauren Chen from Canada. And basically she was funneling, according to this indictment, she was funneling money from Russia Today illegally into the U.S. and paying these people and huge amounts of money. This was per video. Dave Rubin had a show where he would, it was like America's Funniest Home Videos. So they would put in front of him like dumb guy TikToks for 10 minutes. And he would say, oh, like Darwin Award. And he, for that, would get, I'm not kidding, I think like $100,000 per video. And so these guys are doing, they're doing a video a week, you're clearing like 400 grand a month. And so suddenly, you know, someone like Tim Pool is saying, I'm going to open a skate park. I'm going to open a coffee shop. They're building these like compounds. All of this money is flowing in. And then the FBI turns it off. And so so cut to the start of the Trump administration, Lauren Chen, who can't re-enter the country because she was part of this operation, she wasn't indicted. But suddenly Trump says, you know what? You know, the Trump administration basically lets her and her husband back into the country. And then a few weeks ago, they were at the White House Easter egg roll. So these are people who were, according to this indictment, were essentially foreign agents. I can't just walk up to the White House Easter egg roll and I'm a citizen, much less someone who had these kind of weird foreign entanglements. So when you talk about like the role of Russian money, or certainly dating back to the Trump's 2016 campaign. On one hand, I think a lot of people on the left have said, oh, we can't just jump at every shadow. Not everything's Russia. And I think that's true. A lot of it is this kind of like sickness in the American soul. But on the other hand, there clearly is like a lot of weird Russia stuff going on in addition to that.
What do you make of the idea that the people receiving these vast sums of money for doing very little work and not very good work were somehow unaware that there was something nefarious afoot?
Yeah, it's funny. So Dave Rubin, in the indictment, he basically, they have to create like a fake identity to trick him because he's, I don't know, who's like, why am I getting all this money? Who's funding this? And they basically create like a Facebook page or something, kind of a very thin identity and say, oh, it's this, I think it was like a Greek millionaire or something. But I do think it was, for a lot of these people, there was like a fig leaf, perhaps. They have argued, we're the real victims here. Okay, are you guys going to be giving the money back? I think this might be the first case where like someone was victimized by being given several million dollars. It's a crazy situation. And then they started to say, maybe this was really a Russian operation to hurt conservatives by discrediting their heroes like Tim Pool. And yet, if that was true, why is Lauren Chen being welcomed back into the country, getting this sort of special visa treatment? So it's a real mess and one that hopefully a future Democratic administration will uncover more of. Just to put a pin in that, I think the amount of like foreign influence and just like weird, sometimes domestic influence, but that goes uncredited in right-wing media is really big. Like there was a writer for the Gateway Pundit, this guy named Elijah Schaefer, who suddenly took a passionate interest in how U.S. sanctions applied to Russian oil refined in India. Now, this is not a guy who cared ever about refineries. And he's saying, this Indian man is a really just honest businessman, and we just have to allow him to process heavy crude. Clearly, there's a hidden hand at play there.
But yeah, when I think of Elijah Schaefer, I don't generally think of him saying many positive things about Indian people at all.
And that's a good point. That's a great point. This is a guy who, in the U.S., there's this real like rising sense of like anti-Indian hate. And certainly, as you said, this is a guy who specifically hates Indians and suddenly is like, I'm really getting involved in the Indian oil industry.
Yeah, it doesn't quite ring true, does it?
No. And we're being asked to believe this. And I think for the vast majority of the audience on the right, it just like they don't care and it just goes past them. What are they going to do about Indian oil policy? But on the other hand, you have these companies. There's one called Influenceable, where basically, as it's been described most recently by Ashley Sinclair, a right-wing pundit who had a baby with Elon Musk. It's probably like her kind of claim to fame. Basically, she has said there's this website, you go on it, and people say, I think for a couple hundred bucks, and then you post a tweet, let's say, defending soda companies and saying that people on food stamps should still be able to buy soda, which I actually don't find a particularly egregious point to make, but you can see these secret agendas that are being laundered through these right-wing media figures.
If anyone wants to victimize us like this, yeah?
Yes.
Not hard to find.
One threat to democracy that has been identified by the Trump administration is something called Antifa, which has been the subject of another declaration of war by Trump. How is Antifa or anti-fascism faring in the United States under the current government?
It's interesting. The administration, I think, particularly after the assassination of Charlie Kirk, there was this sense of we're going to uncover all these networks, and there had to be there was really no genuine nexus to the Charlie Kirk assassination besides just this lone gunman. But somehow this idea that Antifa is out of control, that someone like George Soros or who knows is funneling money to these efforts, and we're going to bust them and we're going to criminally prosecute them. And I think the reality is they can't do it because these things don't really exist. To give you an idea, there's this malevolence that's hindered by incompetence. And I think I'm borrowing someone's phrase there, but I think you can really see that in Kash Patel's FBI, or Pam Bondi obviously was recently fired as the attorney general. But these people, I think, really would love to be prosecuting people like James Comey, the former FBI director, all these Trump enemies. But they really struggle to even get indictments. Look, I'll give you an example. I'm here in D.C., when they deployed the National Guard, there was a guy who threw a sandwich at the National Guard. And this was like, we got to get this guy on a felony charge of throwing a sandwich. And the DC grand juries wouldn't indict him. And if they can't do that, they're not going to uncover this kind of mythical terrorist network. I think ultimately, if you cycle through enough grand juries, if you fire enough people who have any kind of conscience in the Justice Department, you can get some of these indictments. But I think this effort to like root out Antifa, at least from what I've seen, what we've seen above ground, has failed so far. And I think it's infuriated a lot of people in right-wing media because they've like really hyped themselves up on this idea that there's this like left-wing terrorism in the United States.
Will, another topic that you have looked into recently has been Passage Press, which is a right-wing publisher that we've talked a little bit about before on the show with Jason Wilson. Could you tell us how Passage Press has fared since the revelation of their fail author, founder Jonathan Kieberman?
Yeah. So yes, you referenced Jason's reporting, which was really useful for something I wrote recently. And so this Passage Press is supposed to be the kind of the publishing house of the new right. I would say the kind of quasi-fascist future of the right. They're trying to inject these interwar European fascist thinkers into American politics. But you know what? It's not going that well. The guy, Jonathan Kieberman, who's Lomez on Twitter, he's off running, trying to build the Lomez brand. He has a show with Christopher Rufo on Glenn Beck's channel online. But Passage Press itself, look, when you're bungling the Raw Egg Nationalist book, it's just not going to work out. In this case, they had Raw Egg Nationalist, who, you know, is a guy who talks a lot about guzzling raw eggs. And he had this book. And him and Milo Yiannopoulos, his buddy, had become convinced that this was going to be The Body Keeps the Score, the new best-selling book, but that was going to mainstream these sort of fascist workout guy politics into American culture. And they felt that Lomez and Passage Press were bungling it, so he pulled the book. And incredibly, they had never made him sign a contract. So he appears to have walked with $10,000 or something and just published his book elsewhere. There were all these different examples of Passage Press just failing to pay authors, all these other cases. So I think for now, at least this effort to take over the culture for the right, it's not working out for them.
No. Maybe time to put out a cookbook.
Yes. You know what? I think he may have put out some cookbooks so far. Yeah.
Salmonella and you. My God.
We've mentioned briefly the upcoming midterm elections, and it appears that there's great concern among the MAGA base or supporters of Donald Trump that his popularity is declining, partly as a result of the war in Iran. But what are you expecting to happen in November?
I think right now it's, you don't have to be a great prognosticator to say it's not looking good for Donald Trump and the Republicans. Alex Jones was just saying that Trump is doing, the only explanation he can see is that Trump is deliberately trying to sabotage the midterms and destroy the Republican Party. So at that point, I mean, when that's the only thing he can understand, I think it's going pretty badly. You have a lot of trends that are going to activate Democrats and turn off independents from Trump. Things like whether it's the Epstein files or things continue to be more expensive. Obviously, the war in Iran is unpopular and it's also driving up gas prices. You have all that and it's just kind of the Trump administration's in a bit of a malaise. There's not really an effort to pass any new legislation. I think it's just looking crummy for them across the board. Conversely, I saw some Republican guy who was like, we're just going to sew up this war. Trump hung out with the astronauts we sent to the moon. We have the America 250th anniversary celebrations, and people are just going to love that so much. It's going to be a midterm victory. I think that's crazy. That's not really how people vote. They're not going to be like, oh my God, those fireworks were so sick. Although I don't know, maybe they will. I'd say that Americans wouldn't do that. But I do think it's just looking really bad for them right now.
Oh, well, on Yenar Pastran, we're always interested in what Steve Bannon is up to. Is he still in the inner circles or is he a bit on the outs at the moment?
He's an interesting guy because I think there's this sense, like we think of him back in like 2016. I think when other people in the media or it's a general public perception of him is like the puppet master, like the king. But I think, as far as I can tell, he's on the outs. I'm sure he's like relatively well connected with the White House, but this is a guy who is not making a lot. He was against the war in Iran. That happened. Basically, he wants to focus Trump's political capital on things like deportations and sort of crushing the elite. And instead, he's seeing it spent on things like the war. I'd say also from a practical point of view, Steve Bannon's the emails that came out with him and Jeffrey Epstein, where he's coaching Jeffrey Epstein on how to improve his image. And by the way, not like in 2010, like a month or two before Epstein died. And so when all this stuff was really on the table and he's saying, but Jeffrey Epstein's last ride, let me help out here. I think in the right-wing media, it's a very factious world. It's a world where people love tearing into each other. And I think when you have emails like that with Jeffrey Epstein, it hinders your efforts to exert influence.
Speaking of Steve Bannon, Donald Trump seems to have put the Vatican in his sights recently. How's that going down in the United States?
I'm so glad you asked because there's something I think hasn't been like explored enough, which is there's this growing divide in right-wing media and particularly among like the talking heads. I don't think the average person like going to mass, like my grandmother who would like take the casserole to the funerals. I don't think she would be plugged into this. But basically for people like a lot of the dissident right, so people who are increasingly critical of Trump, people like Nick Fuentes or Candace Owens, these are also people who are Catholic. Carrie Jean Bowler, who's a former beauty queen, who's joined this kind of like anti-Israel and often anti-Semitic kind of coalition against Trump. They're Catholic and in many cases kind of new converts. And Carrie Jean Bowler was on this religious freedom coalition and she was like going after the Jews. And there were these other priests there who were like, I don't think so. That's not like being Catholic. And it was like, I don't know, man, I converted 6 months ago. You have this divide where, and then evangelical Protestants are seen as much more tied to Israel and so supportive of this idea of an Israel-centered apocalypse that they have to help bring about. So enter J.D. Vance's attacks on the Pope, Donald Trump saying the Pope is weak on crime or whatever. And so I think you have this sense, particularly among Catholics, of like this alienation from Trump, particularly, again, the people who are like really plugged in, the people who are often converts, people who are like going to the Latin mass and stuff. I think they're very right-wing people in general often, but I think they're being turned off of Trump.
Wasn't there a time when Catholics were viewed with quite a bit of suspicion in American politics?
It's happening again, really. I certainly don't sympathize with the kind of the Candace Owens Catholic wing. On the other hand, the evangelicals are really getting back into the classic, like Catholics pay their allegiance to the Pope. I saw some evangelical on Twitter discovered that Catholics call the Pope the Holy Father. And they're like, this is blasphemy. This is sick. So it really is getting back to the cartoons of the papal crocodile crawling out to eat American children. It is crazy. And it's hard to know in some ways, like how real it all is, because these things can often be in like small communities and like urban right wing places, like kind of the Republican scene in DC, for example, which is very fervently Catholic. But it's an interesting rift that I think is opening up.
We've spoken or made reference to Catholicism. I'm wondering, just on a final note, how the anti-Semites are faring in the United States. They seem to have increased in number and spread across diverse communities.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I do think we're seeing this growth of some figures I've mentioned already, people like Candace Owens, Nick Fuentes. Candace Owens is very much like increasingly a mainstream entertainment figure. She does a lot of Hollywood coverage, and then she'll just slip in, this person sure knows a lot of Jews, or things like that, with no like real point to it besides just insinuating like any connection to a Jew is like somehow suspect. Also, there was this thing a few months ago where these kind of manosphere figures, many of whom are Black or Arab, people like, or Muslim, or people like Sneeko, Andrew Tate, the Clavicular, the Lux Maxer was there, and they went to the club with Nick Fuentes and they're throwing up the Hitler salute. So I think you're absolutely right. I think there's a kind of idea of this anti-Semitism often tied to things like Jeffrey Epstein, obviously like a larger like disillusionment people have with Israel over the Gaza war and the Iran war. I think it's fueling this kind of like social media, this sort of this casual and kind of pervasive anti-Semitism.
Yeah, I feel when I log on to Facebook or Instagram, it doesn't take a lot of clicks to just go into any mainstream post and find people just openly denying the Holocaust. They're not people, that just ordinary white Australians, in my experience, just being very openly anti-Semitic in a way that seems odd.
Yeah.
And these are not people that have any care for the Palestinian cause at all, I'd note. And yet it seems that a lot of the panic about anti-Semitism does not revolve around that, but revolves around, oh, I saw a watermelon in the supermarket.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. I think it is like I'll be watching these videos, and these are topics that used to be restricted to like Stormfront and neo-Nazi forums, and now it'll just be like a popular TikTok or like a Candace Owens video that gets 5 million views on YouTube. This idea of these Jewish figures who have, I'll give you another example. There's this Professor Jiang guy, this Chinese professor. He's not even a real professor, so I shouldn't say that. But he does this like geo-history stuff that's very popular online. And then he'll say, okay, here's what's up with the price of oil. But by the way, Jews are in this cabal. And this stuff gets big numbers. And so I think you're right. This kind of idea, this sort of suspicion of Jews has become really prevalent. And unfortunately, the Trump administration, for all their talk about finding campus anti-Semites or whatever, you have J.D. Vance come out there and say, yeah, we went to war with Iran because Israel made us. And obviously that doesn't do anything for fighting anti-Semitism.
No, the call might be coming from inside the house.
Yeah, exactly.
On that note, we'll have to leave it there. Thanks so much for coming on. If people want to read more of your work, you are on Blue Sky at Will Sommer.
Will Sommer, S-O-M-M-E-R, and I'm on the Bulwark's YouTube account, on the Bulwark's Substack. My newsletter is called False Flag. This is a multimedia operation here.
Excellent. Thanks so much for joining us. Andy, that is our program.
Yes, but we'll be back next week.
Indeed. See you later.
Friday, May 1st, is May Day, International Workers' Day. Join 3CR all day in our 50th year of coverage, in solidarity with the continued struggle for labour rights and fair working conditions for all our communities around the world.
We got May Day specials from regular Friday shows and special presentations from 3CR's programmers from across the grid. For more info, head to www.3cr.org.au/May Day 2026.
Friday, May the 1st.
Tune in all day right here on 3CR.
Don't miss Future Country, the country road in NGV First Nations Commission's exhibition, now showing at NGV Australia. See new work by 8 emerging First Nations artists from around Australia who've been guided by esteemed industry mentors to present their most ambitious works to date. From weaving and photography to sculpture and possum skin cloak making, experience these powerful works in this free exhibition, open daily until 13 September. Learn more at ngv.melbourne.
A 3CR supporter. Keffiyehs are Palestinian scarves, and they're a symbol of support for justice for the Palestinian people. From the traditional black and white keffiyeh to an array of modern designs, explore the range and order online or drop by 3CR during business hours. Wear your support for the rights of Palestinians. Go to keffiyehs.org.au. That's keffiyehs.org.au. A 3CR supporter.